Today's episode is brought to you by
We Are Cop Connect, a group of lifelong Reds with one vision: to connect Liverpool fans everywhere through a spirit of friendship and togetherness, to build the world's most diverse, most inclusive Liverpool fan group. Join our growing community on our Cop Connect Facebook group, on Twitter and Instagram, and our website copconnect.com. Cop Connect, the ultimate Liverpool fan experience, brought to you by Liverpool fans, for Liverpool fans. Pass the ball, Sir Bobby, and he will score! copconnect.com.
Hello and welcome to the Liverpool Connection podcast. I am Daz. I've got Steve with me, and our very special guest today is a writer and historian about Liverpool Football Club. He has two books out. One is Mr. Liverpool, the Ronnie Moran, the official story with Paul Moran, who we had on a few months ago. Great, great fella. And the really amazing 120-year book, well, not 120 year book, but 120 years of Liverpool Football Club. It's called 19, the official history of our league champions. And our guest today is Carl Clement. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, thanks, Steve. Hiya, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
So we'll get straight away. Obviously, you must be a Liverpool fan. To write two books on Liverpool, I wouldn't expect you to be an Evertonian.
No.
So we're going to go back a bit. When did your love affair start with Liverpool, and then when was your first Anfield experience?
Okay, so my love affair with Liverpool Football Club. I was born in the northeast coast of England, called a town called Scarborough, a seaside town. And for my fifth birthday, I was given a Liverpool shirt, one of the old Kanzi ones. I'm pretty sure it was from the 1987-88 season, which was a title winning season. The season with John Barnes, Peter Beasley, John Aldridge, Strikeforce. So that was like the thing. I got the shirt, and from 5 or 6 years old, I was a Liverpool fan. Obviously, I wasn't from Liverpool, so I followed all the games on the television. My boyhood hero was Mr. Ian Rush, our record goal scorer, and then went on to Robbie Fowler, the Toxus Terrier. Grew up following them, their progress, and then when I got to the late 90s, early 2000, when Gerard Houllier came over. I was 16. I managed to get myself a job, and then I had the money to travel across the country to Anfield with a local supporters club during the Houllier years. And I remember my first game was against, it was a Champions League third round qualifier, second leg, against a Finnish team, FC Haka. I think we beat them 5-0 in Finland, and then they came back and we beat them 4-1. Remember it well, my first Anfield experience after being a Liverpool fan for 10 years. I was 16 and paid for it all myself, the train fare and the ticket. And it was a good chance I got a ticket because we won 5-0 on the first leg. Wasn't that much of a demand for tickets, so I was able to get myself a ticket, and I remember we won 4-1. Gerard Houllier years, my hero, Robbie Fowler scored the first goal. I think that might have been an old goal. Jamie Redknapp, Michael Owen scored as well. And and Peggy Arfex, that was in goal. And that was it. It was a brilliant experience. I was in the lower centenary. As I say, it was easy to get tickets, so I could choose where I was sat. So I was on the halfway line, about 10 rows up in the centenary stand, now named the Kenny Dalglish stand. Yeah, it was brilliant. So that was my, although I was a Liverpool fan for 10 years before, till I got my my first candy shirt, which I've still got today. And I've got a six-year-old son, and sometimes he puts it on.
Oh, wow.
So that's good. And then, yeah, just following through the 90s for the Roy Evans years on TV as much as I can. And then when I got my first job, then I could afford to travel across the country on the train and, yeah, pay for my own tickets. And then from there, from when the Julia years started, I used to go regularly as much as I could. The more I worked, the more I could go. So then we were in like an official affiliated supporters club, which got us tickets. So we'd go on the bus or the train. Sometimes we'd go two times a week if it was a Champions League game on a Wednesday. My mum had to sign an authorisation that I was ill or something. So I remember playing Newcastle once, and I was on Sky Sports walking past, and a couple of my schoolmates recognised me, but thank God the teachers didn't. But that was good. And then on a weekend we'd be back for the Premier League game. So that was all during the Julia years, where I was going to the match regularly. I think there was a couple of seasons when I didn't miss a game. All at home, though, in them days, I was not like in the close circle to get the away tickets like I have done recently. Yeah, that's about it. Robbie Fowler, absolutely love him. I got to meet him a few times with my work later life and kept him reminding him that he was my hero and that, like, and Ian Rush, and then players like John Barnes, the 90s team, Rob Jones, who I met as well, great right back, Jamie Redknapp, and yeah, Jason McAteer. I always liked the local kids, the local players that came through. I played a lot of football myself, so I didn't know maybe I could relate to them more than the foreign players that are around at that time. Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, that's a bit of a trek from down south.
No, it's on the East Coast, mate. Scarborough, North Yorkshire. Yeah, so we used to get the Trans-Pennine Express, so it'd actually go from coast to coast, from Scarborough to Liverpool. So we'd get, like, for a Champions League game, we'd leave about 1 o'clock midday and get the to Liverpool about 4 or 5, and then I was 16 then. It was my first time I was drinking, so I used to love to go into the Park Pub, the Albert Pub, sing away, and have a few pints. And then now I've developed onto the not the singing club, the pubs before the games. I usually go now in the Cabbage Hall Pub on at the end of Breck Road. Mm-hmm. Or just go into town and then get the bus up or a taxi to the grounds. Yeah, but it was great days then. Where obviously Liverpool weren't winning everything like they did 10 years or 20 years before. We did struggle in some seasons under Gerard Houllier, although we did finish runners-up on one season. We played some good football. That was when Michael Owen was playing his best football, and he was our main striker, along with Robbie Fowler and then Emil Heskey. Yeah, so it was good. And obviously, yeah, I saw all the development of Steven Gerrard and Jamie Carragher come through and play through. So when I started going, it was Gerrard and Carragher who were emerging into the team, and it was brilliant to see them. And I saw all their process until their last game. So I've always been, that's what I said before, I've always connected to the local players and the English players more.
Steve?
Hey, good morning, Carl. Thank you for joining us. You know, Daz and I, we always love taking somebody's podcast virginity from them. So,
yeah, I was actually a bit nervous, to be honest. I was telling the wife before, like, that, you know, I've never done this sort of thing before. I'm obviously more of a writer. I like to get things down on paper and on my computer. But as I said to you, I think if people show interest in my work, then I'm more than happy to make an effort to communicate and to speak to people about the sort of things I do, Steve.
Yeah, that's, you know, obviously there's been a lot of clamor for the new book 19, but yeah. And which is exciting, you know, can't wait to read it. But take us back to the beginning of your writing profession. You know, obviously you wrote the book with Paul about Ronnie Moran. And so Can you take us back to the history of how you got into writing?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, so the last time I spoke about the Julia years, so I got to the age of 18 and I thought to myself, I'm spending a lot of money here, traveling across the country all the time. So I did my A-levels. I didn't get great results, like, so I had the opportunity to and then to go into further education. So I did that. So I applied for universities, and the only university I wanted to go to was Liverpool. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't really know if I went there 100% just because of Liverpool Football Club. If I didn't get in there and I got into Manchester or University, I would have gone there. But my main goal was to, like, because I was a Liverpool fanatic and traveling there two times a week. I always wanted to go to Liverpool. I mean, when I was applying for the university process, it was a few months, so I was always thinking, oh, I hope Liverpool get me. And I remember when the results came through, I got accepted in Manchester, which I wasn't that happy with, and I didn't hear from Liverpool. So actually, Manchester was my second choice, even though Liverpool was my first. So I was told I was going to Manchester University and I was accepted there. So my first choice, Liverpool, I wasn't accepted. So I actually phoned the person up in the head of languages, because I was going to do a Spanish degree. So I was I phoned the language department up and I said, my first choice is obviously your university, John Moores University in Liverpool, Mount Pleasant. And I asked them if there was any opportunity, if there was any, like, spare places going or anything like that. And he told me on the phone, yeah, Carl, we sent the letter out this morning that we've accepted you as well. So the Manchester letter went in the bin. And then a couple of weeks later, I moved to Liverpool. And then that's when I really started studying Spanish and language studies, which was a lot of writing as well. And that was good because I lived for 4 years in Liverpool. I lived in Park Lane, in the entrance of Toxteth, for a year. And then I moved to Hardman Street on near the bombed out church. Do you know Daz?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I lived there for a year, all student accommodation. And then for my last 2 years, I moved in with my good mate Phil in Bebbington. On the Wirral. So that was 4 years in Liverpool. So obviously I could afford to go to more games because I wasn't paying the train cross country return fares. And that's where basically I got into the writing. I've always liked languages and writing and things like that. And then I met my my girlfriend at the time. We went to the university together and the John Foster building in Mount Pleasant, and she was studying English and I was studying Spanish, so we got to know each other. I taught her a bit of Spanish, she taught me a bit of she taught me a bit of Spanish, I taught her a bit of English. Then we got to go in, and then the end of 2006 I finished my degree, and basically my wife, Natty, said that she doesn't really want to move to England permanently. So I moved to Spain. And basically, it was hard for me at first because I was not only without my family, but then it would have been difficult to keep up my passion with Liverpool Football Club. So I thought of ways to keep in touch with the club. I mean, obviously, I went back to visit my family and I'd go to Liverpool games and they'd always coincide. I'd go back at Christmas. I'd try and get tickets at Christmas time in the summertime and not, sorry, yeah, but the summertime, but for the start of the season in August. And any holidays I went, I would always make sure I went back to Liverpool from Scarborough to go to the games. And then because it wasn't enough for me just going to games, I just wanted to be more contact. So I actually started off a blog. It was called Anfield Europe, and that was just a personal blog. It was just writing about current affairs and historical things on my blog, and then posting it on Twitter and Facebook. I mean, back in them days, I didn't have any following at all. So maybe, like, I don't know, my mates read it or my family read it and they said, oh, that's brilliant, Carl, and things like that. So that was just like to to help me, you know, because I was away from Liverpool, to be more contact with the club. And then my main break with that was, you've both heard of LFC History website.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then I, Arnie and Gudmundur have become good friends of mine. They're from Iceland, and they do LFCHistory.net, which provide the official statistics and archives and facts and figures for actually Liverpool Football Club. So Liverpool Football Club use their website. So I got involved with them, and they were looking for a writer and someone for the social media. So with the Icelandic guys, I got on really well with them, and I was producing, and I started getting back more into the history, because their website is absolutely brilliant. I still use it every day, just to read. They've got everything, every match report from 1892. They've got absolutely everything. I get all my stats. Sometimes I post stats, and I get everything from their website. And they offered me a job as a writer, and yeah, things went from there, because obviously from a blog, a personal blog, there's many about Anfield Europe. They're thinking, like, who's he to, like, a prestigious website? In my opinion, it's the best Liverpool website going. And then I started to get to know a lot more people from them. And through LFC History, I was able to do, like, interviews with former players and managers, Roy Evans, Jamie Carragher, Gary Gillespie, and anyone, like, connected to Liverpool. I did interviews with the great George Sefton, the stadium announcer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had him on our podcast earlier.
Yeah, he's brilliant, George. He's got a few stories as well. George Sefton, I think he's got a book out next year as well.
Yeah, he does.
60 years at Anfield. He's a lovely gentleman. Mm-hmm. He's got time for everyone, and he's very polite, and he'll speak to everyone. So he's part of the fabric at Anfield now.
Yeah.
So from then, I got in touch with a person called Paul Moran, mm-hmm. Just through writing on LFC History. And what I used to do is, like, what I found on LFC History through research, and that I would try and contact the family members of the players, because I was seeing things, and LFC History was seeing things and finding pictures that we hadn't seen before. So on the off chance, I would send things to, like, for example, Paul Moran, and I'd send him a picture of his dad, and he'd come back, "Oh, okay, thanks, Carl. I've never seen that picture. Thanks a lot." So we got speaking, and then through friendship, he came to see me in Spain once, and I thought there was an idea for a book for his dad. Mr. Liverpool, obviously it's a fitting title for such a man, of Ronnie Moran, who started Liverpool in 1949, spotted by a postman that recommended him to TV Williams, and then, yeah, the rest is history with Ronnie Moran. Went through all the teams, the C team, the B team, the A team, the reserves, got into the first team. I think he played 369 times for the first team, winning the league. It wasn't around for the when we won it in 65, the cup. He just retired then. And yeah, I mean, I can't speak highly of Ronnie Moran. And then, so basically, Ronnie Moran, he actually did all that. But within football itself, Ronnie Moran's known for his coaching side. So I think that's actually a thing in itself, that he's played 369 first team games for Liverpool, won a league title, captain the side for a year, from I think it was the season before Bill Shankly came in, 58-59 season, and then I think Dickie White was given the captaincy, and then all that was just a story in itself. And then everything he achieved from 65 onwards, when he did the youth teams as a coach, going into reserves, winning the reserves title, I don't know how many times on the bounce, and then going into the first team setup, and then basically from 74, when Bob Paisley was in the first team setup, right the way to his retirement in 1998. And obviously in that time, I think it was 10 league titles Ronnie Moran won, and 4 European Cups, League Cups, everything. So Paul's a very humble guy, and he I think it was like his dad that he's obviously that everything with the boot room was like done, was secretly done, and they didn't really like to you know, speak about things outside the boot room. So, however, at the time, I was not like pushing Paul to do a book on his dad. So I just thought it'd be a really interesting story, and he accepted that. And then with the guys from LFC History, they were on the project, and I think we produced something good for Ronnie. Ronnie was alive at the time. He was suffering from dementia. I think this was around 2017. So basically all Ronnie's memories were gone. I met Ronnie Morang twice, and he was, obviously he was suffering from dementia, so he wasn't in the best condition. So basically all the memories that are in the book have come from his son Paul, who, yep, Paul Morang, followed his dad everywhere, used to go to Melwoods every day with him, spent his summer holidays in Melwoods with his dad. So Paul had a lot of stories in his dad, and I'm pleased that we produced something to keep his dad's memory alive. I mean, not only for the family and Liverpool fans, but such a legend in my eyes. And Bugsy Moran, he's just seen everything in Liverpool Football Club. If you think about the years that he was there, pre-Shankly, 1949 till... he's gone through it all. He went from the pre-Shankly, the Shankly years, Paisley, Fagan, Dalglish, and then the Julio years, and then he kind of hung up his boots in 1998. But still, for another 10 years, he was involved in Liverpool Football Club as a visitor. He was visiting all the time. He did a bit of commentary. He actually was a scout for a few years. So basically, Ronnie lived till 82, 83 years of old. So yeah, I think he joined Liverpool at 15, 16. So, I mean, as well as people like Bob Paisley, Bill Shankly, Kenny Dalglish, Ronnie Morang would be up there as like one of the greatest employees of Liverpool Football Club.
You know, we had Paul Morang on our show, and I remember him telling me that book at that time when you guys were writing that book, it was very cathartic for him because of the situation that his dad was going through at that time. And he had mentioned that there are so many memories that came up through that book.
Yeah,
that he was so proud of his dad that he didn't really know, but he was proud to tell that story. And I think that's one of the reasons why we like to have authors come on so often. Yeah. And you know, we had Bill Shankly's granddaughter come on, and Tommy Lawrence's kids come on. So they, through these books, they're kind of reliving it. But they all, you can also see the pride that they have that their relative's story, their dad, their grandparents' story is coming back to a new generation of fans, right? So it's a great book, and we highly recommend it. And now I want to ask you about the current book that's come out. How did that, because it's officially endorsed by the club. Yeah. So if you could show everybody the book, and I'm sure they've seen pictures of it before. It's called 19. Yeah. It goes over every single league title that Liverpool has won over the course of the history of the club. So how did you get involved in that project, and how was the process of working, you know, with the club itself into making this book?
Yeah, well, the club knew me from the Mr. Liverpool, Ronnie Morang book that was endorsed by Liverpool Football Club itself. I contacted Liverpool Football Club and I said that we want to produce something in memory of Ronnie Morang along with his son. So obviously they accepted that and did everything to help me, Paul, and Arnie from LFC History to put the story together. And from that book, I was in close contact with LFC History. So the two seasons ago, when we were coming close to winning it, and we just lost out on the last game of the season against Wolves. We beat Wolves 2-0, I think, at Anfield. Mane scored twice, and then Manchester City had to drop points at Brighton, but they went on to winning 4-1 after being 1-0 down. So I was on the cop for that game. And then after that, I thought to myself, if I'm writing a book like this, it's a bit hit and miss, you know, because I could have spent like a year writing it and then we could not win the league. So then it'd all be for nothing. I would have to postpone it and postpone it. So basically, I think around December time, I got in touch with a club when Liverpool were actually running away at the league, and I basically offered them the possibility of producing a book covering all 19 league titles. I mean, at the moment, it was still early days. I'm not sure, I can't remember it by Christmas maybe 12 points ahead. So it was always, I mean, so then I just went for it. I spoke to LFC History again, and I asked them if they would like to get involved in the process, and they were happy to oblige, and they gave me a lot of their research from the early years. So from 1901-06, the Invincible team in 22-23, and then 1947. I mean, they had a lot of research on them, the first five titles until the 60s. So basically, I wouldn't have been able to do it without their help. So basically, they gave me everything I would have needed to write the first five chapters on Liverpool's first five title wins. So then I think it was January time when we started running away with the league, and I think this is the season. This is the season we're gonna win it after 30 years. I mean, they went from 12 points to 16 points, and then. So as I said before, if it's a normal season, it would have been very difficult to invest a lot of time writing a book, and then on the last game of the season, we don't win it. So then, I don't know, it's like, then have to put it back how many more years, another year, 2 years, it's been 30 years. So I think this was a special time for the club. So basically, the first five chapters was mostly Arnie and Gunmunder's work from LFC History. So I had a bit of a head start. And then I had to get together the following season. So basically, I was in contact with a club as well, and I pitched my ideas, and they said... I mean, the club were very like, they never gave me like the 100% go-aheads, because they... I don't know, like... With Liverpool FC, it's not won until it's won, you know what I mean? So they can't say, there you go, Carl, there's a contract, there's a deal. You're going to write a book about our 19 league title wins without it being won. Mm-hmm. But obviously, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, we've not won this for 13 years. This is a chance. This is, I don't think we're going to be caught. So I was working, then I started working. And obviously, because of the coronavirus, we had a bit of a break. So I had more time to put the book together. So basically, after the first five titles, and I was heavily researching. I researched everything. So I did it season by season. So I would take like the Bill Shankly's first title success, and then research everything on that season and pull all the research together. So have you heard of a site called Play Up Liverpool? There's a site called Play Up Liverpool as well, which is a historical site, which is very good as well. A lot of articles on there. So I pulled everything together from LFC History, Play Up Liverpool. And then, because obviously I'm 38, so I wasn't around at that time. So what I wanted to do was speak to fans who went to Liverpool that time. So the first fan I spoke to was a good friend of mine now. Is a man called Billy Howard. I don't know if you heard of him. He's on the Liverpool History site. He played for Liverpool. He went through all the Liverpool ranks during the 50s and was a Liverpool fan. And his first title-winning season was the 1947 post-war season. So Billy, I think he's in his 80s now. I mean, if he's listening to this, he might say, I'm 78, I'm 79. But his first season was the 1946-1947. So I asked him for his input from that, because I thought it was important as well, not to just everything factual, to try and get a sense of what it was like going to Anfield at that time. So I was asking, like, Billy's like, about what was your route to the ground? What did you eat before? What was the atmosphere around? How much was it in? How did you get there? What number bus did you get back? And things like that. So I tried to speak to a couple of fans from each season. Obviously, because only last season I lived in person, so I thought it was very important that I got like a sense of how it was like going to the game in Anfield, attending Anfield, what it was like in the boys' pen on the cop before the game, after the game, the price of tickets. Like I said, just little things like when the souvenir shop was set up. And things like that. So, although the book is very factual, I tried as a writer to incorporate these opinions of fans, and they were very willing to do so, and they brought back a lot of memories. I mean, Billy Howard was only seven at the time, so I had to give him a few days to. I was taking him back 60 years, the poor fella. So. Yeah, he said to me, I'll give you a few days, I'll give you an email, so he'd be racking his brains and all that. But the information he came back was very meticulous, and it was absolutely brilliant. And I did that vet with every season up till the 1990 season, because obviously I was a Liverpool fan at the time. I was only a young boy. So the book tries to bring a journey through all the seasons as a factual point of view. But however, incorporating the fans' views and what it was like at the time and things like that. And then the first five chapters, which unfortunately there's no Liverpool fans alive to tell the story to me. I did a lot of research and what it was like during that time. And I spent a lot of hours researching the newspaper reports and things like that and trying to chronicle it. So in the best way I could, and that was up till when we had a lockdown. So I had a bit more time because I was at home all the time, so I was working weekends sometimes up to the 2 a.m. then up again at 6, only 4 hours sleep, because I was on a very tight schedule, because if there's obviously 19 chapters, and the idea was to get the book out when the title was raised, but because it was put back and then to do with coronavirus, I was meant originally going to include the parade, so that the book would have ended with the parade with the round Anfield, and I would have chronicled that, but that didn't happen. And then because of editing reasons as well, I was doing about one chapter in 10 days or 11 days, which was like 10,000 words a chapter, which wasn't impossible, but it was like, I mean, there was a lot of factual information in there, so I had to be very, very careful about what was putting in there to avoid mistakes. And so I was sending a chapter by week to my editor, and then when the summer passed, I was still doing it. I spent all summer doing it, and then getting into September, October, when it was finally put together. So, yeah, so I think I've done it justice. I mean, I hope fans learn about the all the previous successes, and that was one of my intentions. I mean, as myself, I only lived last year's 1920 season, so hopefully everyone still got that in mind, and then maybe think to themselves, oh, okay, so what was it like winning the title in 1923? So I've got fans' stories in there and what happened in there. So, and maybe they always have the 19 present, and then they can compare it to other seasons.
Let me ask you something, because obviously there's a 30-year gap between titles, right? And so you're including some personal memories when you're talking about the last title in 1990. And what were the major differences in the between the time then and now? I know obviously the demographics have changed around the stadium, you know, on match days. That has to be something that is very pronounced, I would imagine, from, you know, the standing cop, you know, and that's different. So can you kind of name a couple that you're like, yeah, this is totally different than what it was?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of a couple of unsung heroes in Liverpool's glory years was the was Peter Robinson, the secretary, and John Smith, the chairman. So I think like they were there for all during the 70s and the 80s and until the last time. I think John Smith retired and Peter Robinson a bit later on. However, the main nucleus of the club, it was always run by John Smith and Peter Robinson. They used to call him Dapper John. He was very smartly dressed, well-spoken. I think he's one of the best chairmen any football club in the world has. They were very humble people. They always wanted the club to carry on with the stability and the continuity from season to season. They didn't brag. Everything was done in-house. Everyone was treated the same. So basically you'd have the players and the cleaners. They're all treated the same way. There was no, Ronnie Morang used to call big heads. There was no big heads were allowed. I'm sure you've heard the stories about in training, the boot room used to treat Kenny Dalglish or Graham Souness exactly the same as a trainee starting out. So all that had disappeared, Steve. The boot room concepts had gone. From when Graham Souness came in 91. We didn't have Peter Robinson anymore. We didn't have John Smith. And then when actually Graham Souness came in, it changed a lot. The training methods and the way he wanted to run the club from his time in Italy. And then everything changed really going from... Then they reverted back to Roy Evans, which he... Roy Evans did a decent job. Obviously, he didn't have the best players then. And Manchester United were taking over the dominance of the Premier League. And then we went from Gerard Houllier and Benitez, which did see some success in mainly in the cup competitions, but we didn't get the league success. And that all goes back, in my opinion, for Bill Shankly. Bill Shankly setting the foundations, transforming the club, rebuilding the club, making the team a second division club to first division champions. And then Bill left in 74. Bob Paisley then followed it on, did a great job, 6 league titles, 3 European Cups. And then Joe Fagan carried on the reins. And then that was passed on to Kenny Dalglish. And then there was that pause with Graham Souness, an absolutely brilliant player. However, that's when Graham Souness came, that's when the boot room really fell apart, and John Smith, the chairman, left, and then it was the club was running a totally different way. And then, like you said, the dynamics changed. Little things like you said, the standing cot went, so that would have the atmosphere would have gone a bit. The ticket prices went up. Some people, fans stopped going to the game. It wasn't like a family club as it was. There was more money in the game since the Premier League, and it was completely different from that period of post Shankly till Dalglish mainly. And then we've had to wait another 30 years until a gentleman from the Black Forest, Jurgen Klopp, came in and put his principles in, and has reverted us back to them days, the man's personality and how he runs a football club, the brain. And I think him and Bill Shankly, even though Bill didn't have a drink, I think they'd get on really well together. That's basically it, Steve.
Carl, do you think like the romanticism is back now, you know, with Klopp, because a lot of people do look at him like as you know, like a second Shankly?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you only need to know from people like yourself who would have gone the game in the 70s and 80s. And then, although Klopp would come out and he'd say, I don't want to be compared to Bill Shankly, I'm not a Bill Shankly and all that. But the way the club's run now, obviously people have seen FSG's flaws over the last few years, but at the end of the day, their 10-year reign, they've given us the thing we wanted. I mean, it's not, we're never a quick fix after our previous owners, but LFC, FSG have come in, and they've come in for the long term. And then they appointed Jurgen Klopp. And I think, yeah, I mean, obviously we can't go the grounds now, but I think the good old days, as people say, are now back. And I think that this is just the start of it. I mean, I say this with, you know, hopefully this is just the start of it. I'm not going to say that, oh, from the next 10 years, Liverpool are going to absolutely win everything. But we've never been in this situation since Kenny Dalglish, where we went to Kiev and we were runners-up, and then we won it in Madrid the following year. We were a couple of points away, like I said before, winning the Premier League for the first time. And then the next season, Klopp's team won it. And now this season, it's still early days, but I think we'll go on to win the title again. Due to the fact that, I mean, a lot of the other top four, the traditional teams, have actually dropped down. Your Chelsea's, your Arsenal's, your Manchester United's, things like that. As I said before, Man City remain our main rivals. So hopefully in a couple of weeks, we can extend our lead to them, about 5 or 6 points, depends how we get on there. But definitely the romanticism is backed us. I mean, and that's because of Jurgen Klopp. I mean, his appointments changed everything. He's a wonderful man. He's a wonderful human being. You could go far to say that he's a socialist and he wants to help people like Mr. Shankly did back. And that's how Liverpool started on them ethos and everything. Everyone works for each other. If everyone does their job the best, and the club grows on socialism. And then I think that Jurgen Klopp's values and the person he is and his authority that he does in the club himself, I think it's another start of another Bill Shankly era, so to speak. And we can only go on from that with Klopp as the nucleus.
Yeah, because I think, you know, again, you got to go back to the Shankly days, because Shankly set Liverpool up for years to come. And Klopp's doing the same thing now. You know, hopefully he's going to be, you know, I wish he was here for the rest of his life. Obviously, we've got him hopefully for the next 4 years. And then, you know, there's rumours Pep Linders will be the next one, you know, to keep it going on. But, we've gone through dark days, you know, many, many a year, especially with Hicks and Gillette. You know, when the football was really bad as well. So every Liverpool fan has got to feel like we're back finally, you know, where we are back on top of that perch. And it does feel good, you know. I never thought, as any Liverpool fan, it would take 30 years to win another league title. And when we did win it last season, it was tough because we couldn't really celebrate it as well. You know, so it did, for me, it took the shine off of it, you know, until we can get that parade, you know, and the lads can show us that Prem, you know, the Prem trophy, and we're there, you know. It's still really not hit me. What about you?
Yeah, the same. I mean, obviously, when we were, you have to go back a bit, like, we're all worried about the Premier League not even finishing. So we had to live through all that. I mean, it had to be after 30 years, and we were leading the league by about 16 points. And there was all the thing about everyone calling for the Premier League to be cancelled. The French League was cancelled. So we had to go through all that pain and things like that. And then it actually got set back up. Actually when Liverpool were confirmed champions, when Chelsea took points off Man City and all the players were in that hotel in Formby, I was just on my own. Obviously, I had a few drinks, but it's always been in my mind with my mates that over the years that I'm actually in Spain, but I do go to Liverpool a lot more now and go around Europe when I can and I can afford it as well. So I've got a good set of friends and things like that. So my plan was to try and calculate when Liverpool were champions. I think at the start, it could have been against Aston Villa around April time. So I was always looking for flights. And then in the end, I was, I couldn't even watch the Man City-Chelsea game because it wasn't on. So I was just on my own on the computer and having a few beverages, as I said. And then the game where we lifted the title in an empty stadium. Yeah, no, if the, you see all the lads there celebrating and all that, but at the end of the day, there was no fans in there, and obviously there was fans gathering outside, but it wasn't encouraged. So yeah, I agree with you, Steve. Dad, sorry. And my biggest hope now is that this 19 can change to a 20. And then
cross it out.
Yeah. And then next year we can, like you said, have that parade. But imagine it, like, we've been waiting 30 years and then we can celebrate two in one go. But with the current situation, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, Dad. So it's a shame, mate. Honestly, shame, like, because it's not the same. It's not the same when you see back on videos and the sale tape, the 1973 title winning season when Bill Shankly came out in his red shirt and there was fans there, kids running on the pitch, everyone, the Anfield full to the rafters, mate. And everyone was, you know, in and outside the stadium celebrating it like that. It was, obviously, like you said, as a football point of view, we've been playing the best football and exciting football. I mean, last season particularly is like in the old days when the Kopites used to meet up, they used to say to each other, how many is it today? Then it's not if we win, it's when we win and things like that. So I think Liverpool fans have done it well. They've conducted themselves very well and they've been patient and, it's just unfortunately that, like you said, that we don't have a parade and we can't get everyone out of their houses and with the flags and banners like we did after Madrid. It's unlucky, but you know, it's out of our hands and we just have to hope that in maybe next year or whenever we can all go to Liverpool and line the streets and have our banners and have our flags and I'm sure that there's no one who wants to do that more than the players themselves and Jurgen Klopp. I mean, obviously when they went to pick up their Premier League medals, they were in an empty stadium. They were obviously overjoyed because they've won a Premier League medal, but that satisfaction and that the ability to win a league title in front of 55,000 fans cheering their names, clapping their names, that would have increased the celebrations immensely. Does,
you know, we planned on when the travel restrictions are lifted and we win another title, plan on having a big old party in Liverpool. Yeah, at the Arcles, invite all our previous guests. So look out for your golden tickets when we have the party.
thanks, Steve.
You know, hey, Carl. Sorry, Daz. I wanted to mention that. You know, it's funny that you know your start with the LFC historical. You know, the guys from Iceland. You know, and how that has really paved the path for. Yeah. You know, entry into Liverpool, the club, and meeting all these new people that are connected to the club. You know, I kind of think about how, you know, Daza and I through this podcast, you know, meeting like Kieran Smith from the LFC historical page, you know, the Facebook. Yeah. Yeah. And how we've been able to connect to other people starting from there. And then, you know, obviously meeting you and meeting Paul Moran and, you know, and so it's just great that you're able to get to start there at that point. And now here you are, you know, having the history of Liverpool of these 30 titles the all the titles that we've won, the 20 titles. So.
Oh, 20. Oh, Steve, you're a year ahead.
Yeah, I am.
Hey, that's all right.
ever the optimist, I am.
But hopefully, I can. It'd be an easy book, to be honest, because I just need to add another chapter and then change the front cover. And then happy days.
Yeah,
don't have to start from scratch.
That's right. You just get your thumb drive and put another chapter on it, and make it a gold cover, right? For the 20th. So
yeah. Because
it must have been great though, because you know, as football fans, we think we're the all knowing. You know, we know everything about Liverpool, and you know, I always tell Steve when we bring guests on, you know, I'm like, it opens my ears to more information and more history. So
yeah,
when you were writing it and you know, researching, you must have been like, wow, you know, to everything that's happened.
Yeah, I mean, that was a bit of a worry for me, because if you think about how many, there's absolutely most things of Liverpool FC have been written. So basically from 1892, when we started, right up to the modern day, there's been absolutely loads of books and loads of players' autobiographies. So although that my book is very factual, Daz, I wanted to like try and to include a few stories that like even like the hardcore Liverpool fans, I didn't know that. But obviously it would have been very difficult to do, because I mean, even though for specific title winning seasons, they've had their own book. I think there's one for 1946-47 season. There's been other seasons. So a lot of Liverpool material, there's absolutely a lot of Liverpool material out there for that fans would have already known. So with 19, I not only wanted to detail the every season in detail, I would always wanted to maybe think that, oh, even like the you didn't know that, or that's like, oh, that's new to me as well. So I would have had a lot of satisfaction from as well of the younger fans learning about the seasons that their granddads and their dads lived, that if there's any older fans reading it and they can remember what happened in the 70s, and it triggers memories, and although that they've memories been triggered, that also I would have liked to know that they would have learned something new. Mm-hmm. Because Liverpool Football Club, obviously, is one of the biggest and best clubs in the world. There's a lot of things already been documented about that. So you have to really look for the a good marketing scheme, because not to repeat that what's already been written. So that's what I didn't really want. That is just to be like 19 season reviews, and hopefully I've not done that, and I've tried to include like a lot of the quotes from the players, from the managers, from the fans, and try to give it that little bit more volume as just like season reviews. And as well as that, I've got from LFC history, I've got all the stats in at the end of the season, so I've got the league titles, all the fixtures, the top goal scorers, and who signed that season, who left that season. So hopefully, like, it's like 19 mini stories, and then within them 19 mini stories, there's something new that fans could learn, and then they can check at the end which games they went to, which games they missed, who was the top scorer, who made the most appearances during that season, and just things like that.
You know, Carl, you had mentioned earlier about your gravitation towards the local players, right, that come up through the academy and are from Liverpool. And I like to think of this team and Klopp giving that same opportunity to the local lads, right, like Trent and Curtis Jones. Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't realize, you know, on the American side, just how important that is to a club. I know most clubs, they want to have homegrown, but they just don't have the academy system in place to do it. But it seems like it's such an important part of Klopp's thinking as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's it's paramount to Liverpool's success over the years. I mean, I'm obviously like going really far back. Obviously, Liverpool was the team of Max, the Scottish teams, and then getting through to the 60s, then we had our, you call it the Scouse heartbeat, you know, as Trent's gone, our Scouser and our team, like his song goes, and you had your Tommy Smiths, your Chris Lawlers, who didn't just understand, weren't just good footballers, but they understood the area, the club, the people, the how things work in Liverpool. How people treat each other, And then you went on to your Faircuffs and going into the 80s, your John Aldridges, and all. We've always had this Scouse heartbeat, the bloodline. And then recently with, well, not that recently, with Robbie Fowler, Carragher, Gerrard. And yeah, and it's really good that we've got like a league championship team in the Champions League with Trent Alexander-Arnold in from West Derby. And hopefully Curtis Jones, who Klopp thinks highly of, and I think he said that he's going to be playing a lot of games for Liverpool. He's from Toxteth, and a couple of others are fringe players. But I think that it is very important that we've got local players, and we've got that Scouse accent in the dressing room, and we've got the Liverpool connection. And
hey.
We've got that Scouse heartbeat on the field, and like Gerrard and Carragher's in. So it's it's great, and we shouldn't because I mean if we don't have that the players, but I'd always like to see that Liverpool born players, Scousers are representing our club. If it's one or two, that's how it is. But I think, like you said, Stephen, Jurgen Klopp is a fan of our academy. He sees that these players coming through the years, and it interests the club as well, because we don't have to go out and buy players if we can. If they're homegrown, and then we've got them, and they can add that little bit of. Like in the local derbies, in the games that they know, and that can help the team push on as well, and help the foreign players come in and settle in if you've got people who are from there. Just little things like that. I think it's very important to the cause.
You know, you mentioned foreign players. Obviously, we won our last Champions League in Madrid. Yeah. But can tell us the relationship that the Spaniards have with our team? Because obviously, you know, we had Luis Garcia and Xabi Alonso playing for Liverpool. Is there an established connection of Spanish fans to the Liverpool Football Club?
We've got a few supporters clubs in Spain, in Bilbao, Madrid, all over really. And yeah, we had the Spanish Reds a few years ago, like you said, Pep Arena, Luis Garcia, Xabi Alonso, Fernando Torres, and a few others. So basically, yeah, from that, like from the Spanish players going over to the Premier League, we've got a lot of fans here. We've got a lot of Spanish people in general who are, who are Liverpool fans and who've kept going in Madrid. When we went to Madrid, obviously there was a lot of Liverpool fans there from Liverpool, but you also saw a lot of Spanish fans, and obviously I think it's from that era of the success we had under Rafael Benitez and him bringing his preferred Spanish players over from Spain.
Well, I mean, it's kind of epitomized by just how Fernando Torres still speaks glowingly of Liverpool, and Luis Garcia is an ambassador of the club and going around to, you know, and playing in the Legends matches and going to supporters clubs and speaking. So I think it's always interesting to me to see that the fan base from another country, you know, and still following Liverpool like it does.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've got absolutely, I wouldn't say a massive fan base here, because obviously you've got your Real Madrid and your Barcelona. So I would say like the Spanish people, they have their main team, but then they'd have like a soft spot for Liverpool from what happened under Rafael Benitez. He was a very popular man, still is in Spain. And you've got all your Atletico Madrid fans who Fernando Torres was their hero, and people like Xabi Alonso and all that. So yeah, it does affect the fan base in Spain, but I wouldn't say massively. The fact that Liverpool is their first team, the first teams would be your Madrids and Barcelonas, but you'd get people saying, "Oh, I like Liverpool because of the Benitez years and like you said, the connections of the players, because they feel proud that their countrymen went to Liverpool and achieved success there."
Yeah, you know I'm sure this past year has been pretty interesting for you getting this book out. I know you've done a lot of promotions for the book. So what does Carl do now? Does he just take a deep breath and relax for a little bit, or is there another project coming up?
I don't know if you've seen, like, I've set up a little fundraiser. I got in touch with Alton Hospital in Liverpool, and you know, we're all going through hard times at the moment, and just wanted to give something back. So I did a little thing. I contacted the hospital, and I got some cheaper books from the publisher. So I was selling, I am selling signed books for £25. And that's delivery within the UK, and all proceeds and profits for the 19 days period, if you're in line with the book, go to the hospital. Just as I see things like people wanting to helping out with the food banks and things like that, I wanted to do something from my point of view. And as a writer, I just thought that the publishers are giving me the book. I can help out here. So that's what I'm promoting at the moment. And yeah, I've got two books out. I'm willing to write more. I've been contributing as well for the LFC program and the LFC magazine as well, doing bits and bobs. And I'm always interested to hear any new projects that come up. But like I said before, it's quite difficult with Liverpool because most things have already been written. So, yeah, I'm hoping that I can add another chapter to 19, make it 20, get some, make a few changes and then go from there, really. And if anything else comes up, then I'm always ready to listen to people, especially the former players, if they want to get stories out there and things like that. And yeah, I mean, it was hard getting this out, but, you know, I've got two books out, and I feel as though as a writer I'm quite young, so hopefully a few more projects will come my way in the future, Steve.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely link your efforts for, I think, Alder Hey, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Okay, the children's charity. So we'll definitely link that to our website and our Twitter feed.
Okay.
So hopefully we can promote a few more people, you know, learning more about what you're trying to do to help out the kids. So
yeah,
we'll definitely be doing that.
I appreciate that, Steve. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And where can people pick your books up?
Yeah, I mean, then obviously at the moment I prefer that they buy it directly from me. So I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram just for the thing that I'm doing with Alder Hey. But obviously you can get it from Amazon. You can get it from the Liverpool website. You can get it from the bookshops and things. But I think people are tending to buy more online these days. So obviously no one can compete with Amazon's prices. So you can get it from there. Or as I said, you can get it from me, and all the proceeds for the next, I don't know, I think it's 16 days now, will go to the charity in Alder Hey Hospital.
Perfect.
That's brilliant. Again, you know, that's how I feel. Like, Liverpool fans always want to give back, you know.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if you're not a Scouser. It's just a Liverpool man mentality that we just want to help people, you know. And yeah, I just love this club, and obviously, Carl, you love it as well. So, you know, yeah.
That all started, Daz, from what I've researched. That all started from the end of the wars, when communities came together at the end of World War II, and people didn't have anything, and that's when everything came together, communities helping themselves out. And obviously, with Liverpool Football Club going into the 50s and the Bill Shankly, his mentality, that's what all... That not only was it just Liverpool the city, it was Bill Shankly the person that mixed with Liverpool the city that made this, you know, Liverpool fans wanting to help out with each other. If you go to any pub around the grounds, you don't know where, I mean, I'm from Yorkshire, you, Stephen's from Texas, you'd find a mate within 20 seconds.
Yeah, you would, and hopefully a few free pints as well. That's what Steve's that's what Steve's looking forward to the most when he goes over.
Cool.
Hey, I'm not shy. I'll let you know. That's my motivation.
That's good. Yeah, you can't go the game without having a few pints before it goes. It's packet and parcel of it. It does.
Oh, it is. But yeah, it just seems so far away, though. You know, thinking about when they're going to let fans back in the stadium. You know, obviously, UK is going to go in like a full lockdown. Well, it is till December, maybe January now. It's we're just living in a mad time, and hopefully, you know, this pandemic kind of goes away and we can actually, you know, get out the house,
Yeah.
You know, obviously you have kids. I see them. I've got four. So yeah, I can't wait to get out of my house.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, little things like, I don't know what the situation is in your, when without the pandemic, you join up for a few beers and watch the games together. Yeah, the same with me. Like, I'm in Spain. I've got mates here that we just little things like that, going to the pub, watching the game. And as I said, in Anfield, I think when they do start letting supporters back in, it'll be a very small number of season ticket holders. And because if England's been too small, they don't want to start mass travelling. And as soon as you let some fans in, then you'll get other fans in the pubs. And it's a very delicate situation, as you said, Daz. And hopefully, I mean, I don't want to be a pessimist, but I can't really see much happening for the remainder of the season. We're just going to have to be patient, and hopefully the lads will do their job on the pitch, and then it'll be our time, I don't know, next year or the year after, to celebrate as with the lads as well.
Well, we've waited 30 years to celebrate. We can wait maybe another year.
Yeah.
Well, that gives me time to get my work visa from Liverpool, so I can...
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I said, it'll give me another year to get me liver in order.
Yeah, God.
Well, Carl, you know, we appreciate your time today, man, coming out. And hopefully, you know, everybody remembers their first time. So hopefully you remember this positively. And
how did I do?
Oh, brilliant. Great. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. As I said, like, I'm more of a writer, so I don't really like speaking in public. I'm not a shy person, you know, but this is all new to me. But as you've put interest in my book, and so anyone who tries to contact me, I always do my best for them as well, like, to help people out. And you've bought a couple of copies, so I'm just happy that you've put interest in the book and things like that. So I'd like to thank you as on my behalf as well, lads.
Oh no, it's been a pleasure, man.
Yeah, and when you write another book, you can come back on. It's been fantastic. You know, please check out Carl's books. If you're a Liverpool fan, I mean, you need to learn about the history. You just do. You know, like my granddad used to blab on and on and on about, you know, the games he went to, and I'd be like, yeah, granddad, yeah, whatever, you know.
Now
I want to go back. I'm trying to think of the times when he used to tell me all these stories, and I wouldn't listen. Yeah. Now I'm old, you know, I'm older. I want to listen. I want to read. Yeah. So I hope.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I wanted to do, as I said before. Like, I mean, everyone's lived number 19, but then I was just hoping that people like think, oh, what happened to number 14? What happened to number 5? Like, to compare it as well. How did the fans celebrate? Was there a ceremony? Was there a parade? And how did they win it? Who was the top scorer? And asking themselves that question. So it's good to have a reference for something in all one place.
Yeah, brilliant.
Definitely.
Okay.
But yeah.
Thanks so much, lads, for having me. And you have to send me the link so I can promote it on my social media and things like that.
We definitely will, Carl. We'll keep in touch. We message each other regularly, so
yeah.
And like Steve said, we'll put a link on our website, our Facebook and everything to buy the book, because like I said, everybody needs to get it. Especially now that you're doing it for Alder Hey as well. So brilliant.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot, lads, for everything.
You're welcome. Cheers, right, Carl.
See you later. Bye. Up the Reds. Bye. Right, thank you.